to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get this hour going. Welcome to Flames Talk. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and the Hot Stove Lounge. It's Monday, November 4th, and we're underway on the sports drive for Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. So here's the situation. Flames open the season with their best ever six-game start, 5-0-1. Since that point, they win 5 of 6. They have lost 5 of 6 ever since, including Sunday's 4-2 loss to the Edmonton Oilers. And that's where we're going to kick it off. It is a great day to do a little Monday roundtable. It's Pat Steinberg along with you here at the Hot Stove Lounge in the Scotiabank Saddle. And we got Aaron Vickers as our co-host this week from NHL.com. Hello, Vix.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
There I see two. Your right and
correct.
My left would be Danny Austin of Post Media in here with us as well. Mr. Austin, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Can you hear yourself?
Can I hear myself?
This way, right there. There we go.
I can hear myself, so
okay.
I know that I'm on.
Okay.
I'm a little less experienced with this radio thing than the rest of you guys.
So. But you're the best dressed, so there you go.
I mean, I am wearing a pretty sick camouflage vest. Right
I can't
now.
See
how
most.
Did you? How did your rabbit hunt go today? Aren't you supposed to wear an orange toque as well?
I have an orange toque that I have worn.
I believe you.
Yeah. And the that witty little addition is Wes Gilbertson, of course, of Post Media. Hi, you just couldn't get enough of us after a full week back. You needed to.
Oh, he works one back. Week in a month, and it's a little too much for him.
I'm staying out of this one.
That's fair.
Expected goals?
I'll get my shots in later.
Oh, I don't want to get into the expected goals again. My feelings are still hurt from that. We got lots to talk about this hour. Full hour roundtable with West, Danny, Vix, and yours truly. Guys, and let's start with that. Vix, they go 5-0-1 out of the gates and was one of the biggest surprises around the NHL. They're 1-5-0 since. That means, big picture, they're sitting at 6-5-1 on the season. Through 12 games. I know we're always living game to game, and we're always kind of evaluating game to game, but big picture, 6-5-1, is that maybe more the ballpark of where we thought the Flames or where you thought the Flames might be and might be sitting this season?
Yeah, that's right in the wheelhouse, pardon me, for where the expectation was. And I think from my perspective, if I were the Calgary Flames, regardless of how you got there, scrap how you ended up with a 6-5-1 record, I'd be happy with that. Now, you laid it out. They started 5-0-1 at six game streak, point streak to start the season, and then one win in six games to follow. That's not the formula. That's not the recipe. That's not going to get anybody excited, where you swing the pendulum so far one direction, then you go so far back the other. I can't imagine there's a lot of satisfaction in the Flames dressing room about being 6-5-1 right now, just because of how they've gotten to this point. But if you just take the snapshot of the record, of the standings, of where the Calgary Flames sit, 6-5-1 after 12, I think, is appropriate for the expectation coming in.
Boys?
I mean, if I'm being completely honest, this is still better than I thought they were going to be.
Plus one. Just what he said.
I mean, I think that if we take the Utah and Vegas games in isolation, I by and large think that you're happy with the performances throughout this season. Like, this team, I'm not sure I should be saying this on Calgary radio, but probably should be losing to the Edmonton Oilers on most nights, just based on, you know, the
rosters.
Based on the rosters, exactly.
Fair.
So, like, I think 6-5-1 is good. I think you're happy with it. I think that you are. There are a couple key players who you want to see better from, and I'm sure we'll get to them at some point. But like, I don't think you can be disappointed by the record. And I honestly think that, with the exception of those two games, I don't think you can be disappointed with the effort either. It's just, as we all know, this team sort of lacks that super high-end offensive talent
right.
that separates the good teams from bad.
Yeah, I think if you would have offered the Calgary Flames 6-5-1 through a dozen, you know, based on maybe the external expectations, based on, you know, realistically where they are in the long-term build that they're going through, I think you'd take 6-5-1 at this point. And like Danny, I'll be honest, I probably didn't have 6-5-1 on my bingo card. Now, I didn't didn't think we were going to be sitting here talking about 0-12, but, you know, if you go back a few weeks and you're on the brink of a season opener and you've just lost your leading goal scorer from last season due to injury, like, yeah, it felt like things could kind of go the other way pretty quickly on the Calgary Flames. They deserve a ton of credit for the start they got off to, and now it's going to be really interesting to see to what extent I suppose they're able to pull themselves out of this. Like, there are some of the concerns that you worried about, right? The goals have been really hard to come by all of a sudden. The power play is struggling. The goaltending has, I think, still been sharp, but hasn't maybe had the results that you saw early in the season. So, you know, now they're giving back those points. It's fair to wonder how much longer they'll be above 500, and I am really curious to see sort of what the response is, because they know we're sitting here, or, you know, they know people are sitting around the hockey world saying, I told you so. You know, here go the Calgary Flames plummeting in the rankings, plummeting in the standings. Forget them on your, you know, power list or whatever. But I'm curious to see where they take it from here.
So if you were to go look at their 542 points percentage, that has them on pace for about 89 points, between 88 and 89 points, which...
Good season around here.
Is kind of which
88-89, that is not that, not the number that, of points. That, yeah.
Excellent clarification
I see what you did there. It's like when people, whenever you talk about the 1920 season, be like, oh, they didn't know the Flames were around in 1920. Anyway,
I take offense to that.
That would be right, it up would your, be that me. Would be right up your alley. 89 points is what they'd be on pace for with this 542 right now, and that 89 points is a little bit better than where they were last year. And if you were to extrapolate 89 based on last year's playoffs, 98 was the worst team in the Western Conference in Vegas who made the playoffs last year. Flames missed at 81 points by 17. 89 is kind of, I didn't see this team being, you know, in the 31st place echelon. I saw them being kind of where they were last year, like in the mix for a lot of the year, but on the outside looking in. I just, Wes, we talked about this enough, like the 31st and 32nd, as it stands right now, they don't, their depth isn't bad enough to be that bad. Their even their high-end talent, as much as it's not, to Danny's point, like Edmonton's or Colorado's or Winnipeg's, it still isn't bad enough to be the worst team in the Western Conference. So them being kind of in the mix, but likely at 89 points, that would not get you into the playoffs. That is big picture kind of where I thought this group might be this year, which is kind of where they've been in a lot of years.
Yeah, and it probably exactly where a lot of people who are listening right now don't want them to be, right? You know, that is the fear for the Flames fan base, is that this is a group that finds that sort of mushy middle between a playoff team and, you know, a team that is going to be getting one of those prized draft picks in the spring. And I certainly understand, based on the results so far, how those fears are, I think, continuing to grow. You know, this does look like a team that could finish 20th overall in the standings. Now, I think this can certainly go two ways from here, but I understand where those fears are coming from.
I want to pivot, and I want to join Danny and Wes's team, because I didn't realize the Western Conference was struggling so bad. The Calgary Flames right now hold the second wildcard spot.
Yep.
And if you told me after 12 games the Flames would be in a playoff spot, absolutely, if you're the Flames, you take that all day. But that doesn't necessarily jive or align with what my expectation for the team was. You mentioned, I figured they'd be probably around 83, 84 points on a pace like that, which, if one of those is your birth year, congratulations, you're old. I think that's
everybody in this table is one of those birth years.
But the fact that the Calgary Flames do find themselves after a dozen games still holding down a playoff spot, when you frame it that way, for me, that's exceeding expectation.
The conditional pick is if there
top 10.
So that feels pretty important to this conversation, doesn't it?
Let me give you a little bit of rundown. Let me give you a little bit I don't know, if you're a Flames fan dreading giving the 11th or 12th overall pick to Montreal and then having number 29 or 30 instead, I understand. But if they remain on a pace that kind of keeps them on the outside looking in, not awful, but on the outside looking in, like maybe a Kuzmenko and or a Mantha get traded. Now all of a sudden, maybe somebody else gets moved. Now all of a sudden, as you move closer to the trade deadline, much like last year where they traded away a lot of players throughout the year and then they finished 17 points back and were in the top 10 and ended up drafting number 9 overall. That would be the one thing that I think you need to remember is that Craig Conroy is not going to be buying. If they're fighting for a playoff spot or kind of on that bubble, in that bubble conversation, I don't think Conroy's buying. I think he's more in the selling mode, which then all of a sudden helps your team fall back a little bit if your NHL roster gets depleted that much more, right?
It's where I dread being a GM, though. Because, like, if you are sitting there fighting for the wild card spot,
And then you trade guys away that help you?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a tough message to send to the guys. And I actually don't necessarily know that that's what would happen. I think that if the playoffs were a possibility, you'd just sort of stay the course and try to go, not give up any prospects to get better in the short term. But you probably just have to make the decision to sacrifice that pick a little bit.
I think it's important, you know, when you talk about trading a couple pieces away and maybe, you know, that weakens your roster. Like, it's important to remember that the Flames are 6-5-1 with almost everything going their way so far, right? What were the question marks? Goaltending was one. Well, they've had really strong goaltending from both their guys. They had, you know, a really competitive training camp with the sort of push from below or the push from the young guys that you expect. They, you know, their only significant injury turned out to maybe not be as bad, and I'm referring to Yegor Sharangovich, as we expected. Like, last year, one of the things that made the Calgary Flames a really weak team after the trade deadline is suddenly they only had 3 top 4 defensemen. Well, guess what? It's November 4th, and they only have 3 top 4 defensemen. So, you know, the depth of this team is going to be tested. There's going to be some bumps along the road, and if I was a Flames fan, or if I could, you know, give a message to Flames fans, it's probably don't worry about that pick just yet. Like, there's some things that could happen over the next few months that that are really gonna put this team to the test.
And I would also add that, like, everything's going right, but they're also 6-5-1 without Nazem Kadri really producing, without Yegor Sharangovich really producing at all. And I mean, different reasons. Like, if some of their top guys, the guys who you are hoping are going to carry the offensive load, if some of those guys do start actually being productive, it's possible that, you know, this free fall that we sort of see them in right now isn't actually going to last forever, and that they are slightly better even than we're saying that they are.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see this team as being a 5-0-1 team playing at a 917 points percentage. Yeah. And I don't see this team being a 1-5-0 team. They're somewhere in the middle. Just the fact of the matter is, with how these splits are so drastic, so different, that it's easy to go, okay, well, this team was undefeated in regulation in 6. This one's only got 1 win, regulation, overtime, shootout, otherwise in 6. To me, they're somewhere in the middle that should probably be, over the course of an 82-game schedule, maybe a 2-3-1 team or a 2-4-0, not so much 2-4-0, but like 2-3, somewhere in there where they're just slightly below that 500 mark.
I will say, before we pivot to the next topic, the draft pick and the conditions that surround it, whew, needing to be kind of like bottom 10. If it's a top 10 pick, Calgary keeps their pick and transfers Florida's to Montreal. Otherwise, if it's outside the top 10, Calgary's pick transfers to Montreal, and it'll be the Florida pick that the Flames own going into the 25 draft. I can tell you the Flames are very much aware of that as well, and it is not insignificant for them. That doesn't mean they're going to, all of a sudden, as we know, Craig Conroy's been very transparent. They're not tanking, and they're not going to try to tank, but they are. There's also a very large awareness that that condition exists, which I do think will be at the very least in the back of minds when they start to make decisions moving towards trade deadlines, so on and so forth. Okay, Danny Austin, Wes Gilbertson, Aaron Vickers, my name is Pat Steinberg. Little Monday roundtable on this hour of Flames Talk. Wes, I'm going to start with you on this one because, you're the one that was like, we need to talk about this on a roundtable, and B, you know, you've been a really big proponent of this player going all the way back to early last season, and that player is Martin Pospisil. There's been a lot of discourse surrounding him since Sunday's penalty in the latter stages of the loss to Edmonton. Zach Hyman's power play winner was scored with Martin Pospisil sitting in the penalty box for an offensive zone high-sticking call. Where are we on Martin Pospisil's season? The effectiveness that we've seen from him, the idea that we have seen some ill-timed penalties, and the center ice experiment has been at least put on pause for the time being. Let's just get into a conversation, gents, about this season so far for number 76.
I think, you know, the easiest blanket statement to start with is, at least from my vantage point, Martin Pospisil hasn't had the impact on games that he had last season. There were very few nights, if any, during his rookie campaign that you kind of thought, oh, I didn't really notice Pospisil tonight. Like, I'm not sure I ever left the Saddle Dome thinking that. And I think there's been several nights already that's been fair. And so, you've got the concerns with the penalties. I know last night's maybe a quote-unquote kind of tough luck, hard-working penalty, but it's, what, 192 feet from your own net? Like, Yep. Hey, it's bad luck, but in the NHL, you can't take a high-sticking penalty 190 feet from your own net in a tied game. I was maybe a little bit surprised by how visibly frustrated Ryan Huska was last night, but I understand the frustration. And so, you know, I've been thinking a lot more about Pospisil as I drove away last night and throughout today. He looks to me, guys, like a player who's maybe lost his identity a little bit. I don't know if that was playing center. I don't know if that was playing alongside the most offensively gifted player on your team. If he maybe started to think, oh, I got to produce now. I got to be a guy who puts up points for this team. I'm not exactly sure the root cause of it, but he looks like a guy who's strayed from his identity as a player, and I have some ideas on maybe how they can get him back to that, but I'm curious to hear first what you guys are seeing.
I think the symptom of what you're describing is an overthinking from Martin Pospisil, and we saw it at times when he was down the middle where he was probably taking a half second too long in his decision-making, because this is the first time he's played center at a level such as this where he's getting the puck on his stick, or he's evaluating the situation and trying to determine what his next move is. And I think that was part of the reason why he wasn't maybe as effective at center as I had personally had hoped. And then he gets put back to the wing, and there's penalty trouble that is very visible. You don't have to be an expert to know that you're not supposed to hook a guy in water ski for 10 feet and expect to get away with it. And that happens once, and then it happens twice in a game. And then to your point, Wes, like, I have very little problem with the high-sticking penalty itself. You're in a battle. You're engaged with a defenseman. You're trying to lift his stick to get the puck, only he had moved his stick, so all you do is catch face. And, yeah, you can't have that happen 190 feet away from your net. But if that's a Michael Backlund, for example, or Blake Coleman, or even a Nazem Kadri, who got called for a slash that ended up in a loss not too long ago, it's so much easier to look the other way. But when you've had the penalty trouble and you've had the narrative around you where we need to teach this guy when and what kind of penalties are acceptable, this amplifies it so much more. So I think even now with the, we need to figure out how to teach him to walk the line better, he's thinking too much about what he's doing in the offensive end in terms of, okay, where his stick is, how he's battling, making sure that he's not taking these bad penalties, that he's become less effective because as he's coming in, he's thinking instead of just naturally reacting.
Do you think the when to take penalties is important here? Like, I just, on my handy little phone calculator, just added it up. I mean, last year he had 109 penalties in 63 games. That's 1.73 penalty minutes per game.
Is that counting majors?
It's literally just on the NHL stats. So Okay. Yes, I am assuming. And this year he's at 1.4. So he's down. He's actually down significantly through 12 games.
Pims per game?
Yes, I recognize on some level that's not like that. That's a bit of a dishonest stat. But the point is, he's not actually being penalized, you know, by the numbers more. But it's the timing. And I mean, his production's actually slightly up per game this year through 12 games as well. There's a part of me that questions whether like a second year guy. Obviously, the experiment with center didn't work, and whether it was just too much for him. I mean, you're asking a guy who came in, played a pretty simple game. I mean, what they always gave him credit for was straight up and down. And then you just sort of said, hey, in the offseason, we're adding a like, it is a completely different position. There are different responsibilities. There's different everything. And whether for a second-year guy, that was just overloading him a little bit. And I sympathize with that on some level. And I expect us to see him on the wing where he's proven he can be effective for the rest of the season at the very least.
Pat, you were sitting in here last night hosting. You weren't, you know, in there with Ryan Huska. But what did you make of the post-game comments?
Well, like, you could tell. I mean, when the first question was asked, he says it's not okay. You're like, that again, like, Ryan Huska never loses his temper. He's never, like, the tone is never really different from one news conference to another, but the words, you can very much get a really good idea as to how the coach is feeling when with the words that he says, and which I guess is most people, but you could just, there are certain things that he will say when you can tell he's upset compared to when he's okay with something that happens. And like, when you hear him say that's not okay, you know that there's some frustration there. And I guess it goes back to the fact that, you know, we've been talking about the penalty side and the walking the line part of Pospisil's game since he got here to the NHL a year ago. And we've seen him cross that line many times. And, you know, now we've seen a few ill-timed penalties that, you know, he got himself sat down against Pittsburgh for a pair of offensive zone penalties, which was really frustrating, I know, at the time for the team. I just, the problem that I have with this whole conversation is that I do worry about what Danny's talking about, the center ice part of it, you know, adding more responsibility and adding that hamster wheel starting to roll. And then now, you know, not taking penalties. And Wes, you said something last night on Sunday when we were talking in the media lounge. You said, like, I think he's trying not to take penalties. And so now you've got kind of two hamster wheels going at the same time. And when you're thinking that much, and so much of his game is just instinctive, right? And now it's kind of like, can he go and be the instinctive player that he is when those hamster wheels are rolling? I wonder how much that plays into it. And thus, I wonder if you're the Flames, if maybe, and I've seen this a little bit on the text line a little bit, like, maybe he has to learn this stuff at his own pace. And yeah, getting sat down and getting criticized by the coach or whatever is part of that development process. But like, how much can you actually coach that out of him? And how much of it is just him learning as he continues to adjust to NHL officiating and the NHL game?
You said something that made me perk up a little bit, and I think we all agree that Martin Pospisil is at his best when he's playing instinctually. But all he's been told for a good part of the last year is, yeah, play instinctually, but pick your spots better, walk the line better. So really you're saying is play the way you play instinctually, but don't trust your instincts because sometimes they're wrong a little bit. So I wonder, going back to the identity thing, going back to the thinking thing, all this is running through his mind as he's still trying to learn exactly what he is at the NHL level, that it's almost worked the opposite way where it's inhibited some of his instinct, which is what I think anyways, and you sort of mentioned, Pat, that is his bread and butter to this point.
How long do you give him to figure this out? Not that you're sending him down or anything like that. I just ask because last year, anytime there'd be these big, you know, the whole hockey world was mad at Martin Pospisil, and the Flames really defended him and said, you know, this guy walks the line. He's got to figure out where that line is a little bit. But, like, he seemed to delight last year in being a pest and in getting under people's skin, and, like, that seemed to be what made him effective. He really seemed to relish that role. And, like, I don't know that you necessarily, like, you don't want him taking third period penalties in the offensive zone. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. But, like, I do think that you kind of have to live with this a little bit with Martin Pospisil because you don't want him losing that part of his game. I don't think he's nearly the effective player if he isn't walking the line just a little bit. So I'm just curious, like, how you
– Yeah.
Do you not kind of need to live with it?
Well, I think the frustrating thing is that this has been probably a better behaved Martin Pospisil, and I say that in a negative way because he's not having the same impact on the forecheck. He's not irking opponents the way he did last year. Like he's not that guy who is so deeply ingrained in the game that he has his fingerprints all over it. And then when he does make a mistake or take a penalty, it's one of those that I think the coaches look at each other and go, really? really, we're tied with the undefeated Winnipeg Jets, and he just slew-footed a guy in the neutral zone? Really? We're tied with the Oilers, and he just scalped their defenseman 190 feet from our net? Like, I understand where the frustration's coming from. Yeah, every guy's going to take some penalties. Because Ryan Huska said last night, well, you know, there's different ways you can coach it. I actually think some of the non-coaching, but something that's going to help is what's happening right now. For the first time in his NHL career last night, Martin Pospisil was blamed by his coach and by the media for costing his team a game. I think that is going to be a little bit of a wake-up call for a player, right? That's going to be something where he sits and goes, man, like, it's one thing when the whole hockey world is saying, oh, did he throw an elbow there? It's another thing when your teammates are looking at you and going, we probably could have won that game if it wasn't for you last night. But I'm really, you know, interested mostly now in how the Flames push this thing forward. And I'll tell you, if I was coaching the team, this is, and thank God I'm not because I wouldn't be very good at it, but this is what I'd do. I'd put Martin Pospisil on the fourth line tomorrow night. And I'd put him there for two reasons. Put him there because, A, I want him to get back to playing a fourth-line type of hockey, which is when he's at his best. I don't see him as a fourth-liner, but I want him to get back to just trying to run guys through the boards on the forecheck, force turnovers, and then come off the ice and go do it again. I also want to see if I'm the coach. One of the ingredients to the Flames' great start was that their fourth line was having an impact, and I don't think that's been the case of late. The exception being Ryan Lomberg against the New Jersey Devils, but we haven't seen it enough. I actually think Pospisil can help that, and I think the starting point here, and yeah, it's probably going to result in another penalty or two, but I think the starting point is really starting to narrow his identity in again. Really get him back on track of what makes him successful. And if he's taking a couple of those aggressive penalties, so be it. But he's in tiptoe mode right now, and it's not helping anybody. And I think that's the best way to start to steer him away from it.
I think of Sam Bennett when he was here. And Sam Bennett last year set a new career high with 100 penalty minutes. But he did it while he was also producing at a level that you're okay with, right? So he's getting you 40 to 45 points a season. And and Sam Bennett still takes bad penalties. He still takes ones that fans are like, what are you doing, Benny? But you're also, you get the good with it. You know, Brad Marchand is one of the best players in the National Hockey League. He still takes really frustrating penalties. Nathan MacKinnon takes really frustrating penalties. The thing I think you can live, like Danny, you said, maybe it's just something you live with. I think you can live with him taking frustrating penalties if you're also seeing him more like the guy he was last year. Right now, he's not making that same impact with the forecheck. He's not getting under the skin of opposing teams and having opposing players want to get at his throat and all that type of stuff. You're not seeing that, and the frustrating penalties are still a part of it. Somehow, he's got to... And maybe it's just as simple as you said, you know, just go back and maybe in a fourth line role playing a more simple game. But somehow he's got to go back to not worrying so much about it. And I don't know, again, how you do that as a coach, but I do think going back to not worrying so much about the consequences, because then you're getting more of the good from the player too, right?
Mm-hmm. I just think there's a huge slice of awareness involved in this. Like, we're talking about a penalty last night with 10 minutes left in a tie game, in a game that you had to bust your whatever for 42 minutes to get back in that hockey game. And then, you know, you kind of fritter it away on a careless mistake. I'm hesitant to call it careless because the word Martin Pospisil kept saying post-game was I was being careful. Still, you know, a high stick in the offensive zone is a careless penalty. And so I think there's just some awareness on those points in the game where you just absolutely can't afford one of those. Is this a sophomore slump of a totally different kind? Maybe it is, but whatever you want to call it, Martin Pospisil's sort of going through it right now.
And, like, we all sit pretty close to each other in the press box. And this is not just because Edmonton scored. When he took the penalty, every single one of us was like, oh, man, Edmonton better not score.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it in the moment that it was a mistake, regardless of what happened next. So, I mean, I think we all sort of do agree that it's about that situational awareness. But it's just a matter of, like, he does seem to have regressed a little bit. And it's, I mean, I have no idea how to fix it.
Yeah.
I like the idea of putting him with Lomberg and just pointing to Ryan Lomberg and just do whatever he does. And whatever happens, he's still out there with you. So if things get a little feisty, you've got Ryan Lomberg on your line. Just mimic what this guy's doing and you'll be fine.
Hey, why couldn't Ryan Lomberg play in the NHL his first time in Calgary? It's not because he wasn't fast enough. It's not because he wasn't crazy enough. It's because he couldn't stay out of the penalty box.
Yep.
So he had to learn it, right? Sit next to Nazem Kadri in the locker room. You think he didn't have to go through, you know, learning how to walk the line properly? Like, he's got the right guys surrounding him. Really, I actually think he might look back at this in a year or two and say, hey, remember the time the whole city was talking about how I cost us a game in the Battle of Alberta? It was good for me.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, we got a little Monday roundtable going on with Aaron Vickers, Danny Austin, and Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. We're here at the Scotiabank Saddledome in the Hot Stove Lounge. Everything coming at you and getting produced back at the Groundworks Downtown Studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Monday Roundtable continues here at the Dome. Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, Danny Austin of Post Media, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. He's our co-host all week, and Pat Steinberg with you. We're here at the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome and kicking around a few topics through the first 12 games of the season. And Danny, we're 12 games in. It's kind of the first month of the season has been completed. November 4th, I know it's not quite the first month of the season, but close enough. 12 is a pretty good month average when it comes to games played. So they're 6-5-1. We talked about kind of the big picture stuff a little earlier and where they sit in the standings and what expectations were. What's the most positive story through the first month-ish of the season for us, guys?
So I don't know if it's the most positive, but I think that the Kevin Ball start to his Flames career is a pretty big story for the Flames. You know, this guy is third behind Uyghur and Anderson in minutes played. And obviously Anderson is obviously one of the other big stories. Like, there's no question there. He's been incredible. But, like, Ball is a +5. I believe that's behind only Anthony Mantha in terms of plus minus, which I wouldn't have guessed Anthony
Wes's
Mantha.
Wes's favorite stat, if I'm not mistaken.
No, guys, my favorite stat is expected goals. I believe this has been covered.
I told you I didn't want to go there. I'm still hurting.
But I actually tweeted this yesterday. Like, last year, Mantha had 11 points in 82 games. He's got 5 points. And obviously the offense is just an added bonus with this guy. But, like, I think that most of us were curious when he was brought over. But, I mean, he has been, like, you talked, well, they have a top three defenseman, maybe not a top four. Like, we don't even question anymore that Kevin Ball is their sort of third defenseman behind Uyghur and Anderson. And, like, I don't think that's a small thing. If you consider the talent that they traded away last year, they dealt Markstrom, and they actually got a guy who can play. He's young. He's got a future ahead of him. He's not very expensive. I think that it was such a huge add by Craig Conroy, and I really think that it sets them up for, you know, a couple of years as they're bringing in these other young defensemen. He's on their timeline a little bit as well. I think there's a lot to like there.
My post-media colleague, Danny, was so close to getting this right, so close to having the best story of the Flames. He even had the right defense pairing. He was all around it. No, it had... Kevin Ball has been a nice find for the Flames. For me, the best or the biggest story so far has been Rasmus Anderson's play. Not just the offense and the stare down Selly, which might be one of my favorite things happening in the NHL.
But I wanted him to score so bad on Sunday night for that reason alone.
He really is a, or I might even say the tone setter for this team. I think we've truly seeing this team start to take on some of Rasmus Anderson's attitude, which I say in a good way. And obviously, Ryan Lomberg deserves some credit for that as well. But I think Rasmus Anderson has hit that level of follow me boys that we all saw coming from him. Maybe didn't quite see enough of last year in what I think was a bit of a down season for him. But, I mean, we're talking about a guy. I don't know if you've gone and looked at the potential Four Nations face-off rosters, but making the defense corps for Team Sweden is one of the biggest chores out there. Like, they are absolutely stacked on the blue line. And I think we're talking about a guy who's almost made himself a lock to be there. And that is just part of what I think has made him such a positive, along with Kevin Ball.
I also want to be clear that when I was doing my prep for this, I for some reason thought I was going to be fourth on the positive, and someone else was going to have talked about Rasmus Anderson. So I just went with Kevin Ball. Then you came to me first.
It's okay because you're equally as wrong as Wes, because it just goes right down to the fact that the Calgary Flames goaltending tandem of Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf are fourth in the NHL at 5-on-5 save percentage at .936.
This is pretty good for the third overall pick. He's finding decent value at third overall.
I'm not going to lie. This was the tap-in empty netter that should have kicked this whole story off to put you in a better position, Wes, and to not throw your teammate Danny Austin right under the bus. But the biggest story coming into the season, the biggest what's going to happen here, was the tandem of Vladar and Wolf, and is one of them going to be able to play at an appropriate sort of level? Can both play at that level? Will one separate from the other, so on and so forth, and for different reasons? Dan Vladar coming off hip surgery, Dustin Wolf getting his first stint in the NHL on a full-time basis. How are these two individually going to react, and how are they going to react as a tandem as a whole? And each guy's got a .907 save percentage. Again, their 5-on-5 metrics are through the roof. I don't think the is there, maybe with the exception of one game, I think you can say the Calgary Flames have gotten 11. I'm making up a metric for you, Wes. You can love it, you can hate it, but a quality start from their goaltender in the sense that, maybe he didn't steal, absolute flat-out steal a game, but didn't cost a game either for his team.
And I think exception is Dustin Wolf started in Utah.
In Utah. Okay. I think that the goaltending tandem of Vladar and Wolf I'm not going to call them necessarily a pleasant surprise, but the fact that both of them have fared as well as they have through the first dozen games of the season is a very comfortable and good storyline for the Calgary Flames.
This is setting up perfect because we have not talked about expected goals so far. I imagine here you picking fourth overall.
Am I allowed to do that on camera?
What do you got for us, buddy?
I may have flipped Wes a very easily discernible hand signal. I think you're all right. I think Vickers is the least right, but no, goaltending hurts. Goaltending has been outstanding, and I actually like that. That to me, there's two goaltending's one, and then look at this. The combination of Danny and Wes. I was actually thinking this. The fact that they have found a pairing that I don't know any of us. Like, I think when we came into the season, we were thinking, maybe Jake Bean and Rasmus Anderson make up a pairing. And Kevin Ball and somebody. And Uyghur will play with Miramanov. And Bean will play with Anderson. And, they'll put Ball on the third pairing. And, we didn't see Ball for the first week and a half, 2 weeks of training camp. So we had no idea what to expect. But Ryan Huska kept on talking about how, hey, you know what? We really want to try Ball with Anderson. Then they got, I think, two preseason games in together and started the regular season that way. And the pairings have changed many times. We've seen Uyghur play with three different guys. We've seen that third pairing be virtually every permutation you could have of the third pairing option so far. The one pairing that has not changed is Anderson and Ball. And I didn't see that coming. I didn't think that was going to be the pairing they were going to run mostly with. And it's been their best pairing. It's been a pairing that, Rasmus's start to the season, I think there's a nice correlation from the fact that there's a lot of trust in what Kevin Ball does and his ability.
He'd tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure he would.
And I think you've got even more confidence. So that, I've got the green light. Well, yeah, I'm going to hammer through the intersection now because I know that I've got the safety net in Ball back there. And so I think that pairing is something that could be really important for the future, because Anderson, it's my opinion, re-signing and extending Anderson is one of the priorities for this Flames organization.
Has to be.
And if he wants to be here, you've got to bring him back. I think if the choice is there to keep him, you've got to be on the checkmark side of things. And then you've got this 24-year-old who you got as a guy who is way down the depth chart in New Jersey and identified as a guy that you'd like to bring in the Jacob Markstrom trade on top of a first-round pick, and he's giving you these quality minutes. We've been wondering forever since all the trades – okay, well, what's the next Hanifin-Tanev pairing going to be? The one that you just know you can roll out and they're going to give you the best minutes on a nightly basis? Well, maybe you found it. And we're only 12 games in, but all 12 games, Kevin Ball on the left, Rasmus Anderson on the right has been a constant and a very strong constant. To me, that's a really important kind of almost found money that you've picked up early on.
You probably really like the way they played their – like played their way out of what was an early disaster last night too, right?
Yeah,
like
it was a rough start for them.
Rasmus Anderson and Kevin Ball had played 9 shifts combined. Anderson at 4, Ball at 5, and they were each minus 2. And the way that they dug themselves out of that, I think, was probably one of the sort of underrated ingredients in the Flames getting back in that hockey game last night.
And that's the thing. Like, I think looking forward, and it's why I bring him up. And to be honest, I also think, like, the goaltending's been a huge story. I didn't know.
Nope, Danny Austin hates Calgary Flames goaltending. That's all I learned from that.
I didn't know that the point of the segment was to, like, advocate for our own number one. But, I do think that if that can be your top pairing for a couple of years, and you're bringing in Grushnikov, you're bringing in Bruce Davich, like, realistically, like, hopefully within, and I'm saying 18 months, and I think it's probably a shorter timeline like that, and have Uyghur there, I really think it sets up your decor nicely as you sort of wait for Zane Parekh to be ready in a couple of years. So, like, I think it's huge. And as you said, it's the surprise element. Like, I do remember asking Rasmus about Kevin Ball when Kevin Ball finally returned to practice at training camp, and he seemed to have no idea.
Yeah, he was like, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I'm not saying that he wasn't, like, thrilled or anything like that, but he genuinely seemed to not really know how it was going to play out.
I don't know who scouts the New York region for the Calgary Flames, who the pro scout is in that area, but that person is probably aligning themselves to get a little bit of a raise between Sharon Govich and Ball. Because, Ball played 82 games last year with the New Jersey Devils, who had all sorts of injury troubles on their blue line last season. And 82 games in, averaging somewhere around, I think it was 18 to 19 minutes. So there's a good chunk of sample size to draw off of. But the fact that the Calgary Flames were able to add him to the roster, and that pro scout was right, this is what I think Kevin Ball can give the Calgary Flames. It's probably been all that and more. The scary part is, if we reverse this and flip this around, what does the Calgary Flames defense look like without Kevin Ball right now? Which is a phrase I don't know I had on my bingo card a month ago at this point.
They're not 6-5-1, I'll tell you that.
Yep.
You know, the thing I really appreciate about a guy like Kevin Ball, and I'd even say this about Braden Hall, who's obviously playing in more of a depth role, is as you start to incorporate some of these young guys, you know, if Kevin Ball eventually is your fifth, you're a really good team, yep. Right? Like, you have skill sets now in Ball and to a lesser extent Pahal, that if those wind up being your 5 and 7, that's probably a sign that, hey, we're back knocking on the door. We've put ourselves back in having a deep defense. You know, we're in that conversation again. I like that the sort of makeup of those guys allows them to kind of fill different roles when you need them to.
Number 5 in 5-on-5 save percentage right now, Vic? Is that what you said?
I believe it's 4.
Number 4? Okay. So they're top 5 in 5-on-5 save percentage, which is a real positive story. And then in terms of defense pairs that have spent the most amount of time together, Rasmus Anderson, Kevin Ball, number 6 in the NHL. Only Florida's top 2 pairings, Ekblad and Forsling, and Kulikov and Mikkola have spent more. Ekholm and Bouchard in Edmonton, Siegenthaler and Kovacevic in New Jersey, and DeMelo Morrissey in Winnipeg have spent more time together. And that pairing has been absolutely slammed with defensive responsibility. 99 defensive zone faceoffs against just 55 in the offensive zone. So a ton of responsibility on top of everything for the pairing of Ball and Anderson. So, hey, you know what? It was maybe a little bit more negative to kick things off on our Monday roundtable. All about balance. Wanted to make sure we wrapped it up because, you know, as I think we've all said, 6-5-1 through 12 games. Had you told a lot of people that coming in, I think a lot of people would have said, yeah, that's a good start based on the expectations for this group. Hey, always good to do a Monday roundtable, boys. Let's start with Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Where else can we find your award-winning work?
Both the Calgary Herald and Calgary Sun websites. Be a good place to start. And here at Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Good job. Where can we find...
You tripped me up with a word. I don't think I've ever won anything.
That's a fair point.
Just the hearts of the listeners, pal.
You can catch Danny Austin at the same spots on the Post Media websites. Where else can we... where can we get you on social?
Danny Austin underscore 9, I believe, is my Twitter.
Question mark at the end of that sentence?
Yep, there is. I believe it's underscore 9. I get it confused because my Instagram, which is not really like, not that it's not for public consumption, yeah, but like.
Danny Austin underscore
my 9. Instagram is Danny Austin 99, and I get it confused. I'm very rarely asked that question, to be perfectly honest with you.
It's Danny Austin underscore 9 is where I just went and double-checked.
Wes is giving me a look right now.
I think we're both giving you a look, pal.
I was mostly interested in the Gretzky reference, Danny Austin 99.
I thought that with Twitter it was Danny Austin 99, and I thought it looked arrogant, so I switched it to Danny Austin underscore 9.
But yeah. You're fine with looking arrogant yeah. on Instagram.
That's my whole vibe.
I find the underscore to be very disarming.
I mean, maybe I'll change it for the 12th time, which will be great for growing my social media following.
Poor Pat. Poor
I'm
Pat.
Sorry, Wes got me on that one. The disarming underscore. I almost spit out my water. I haven't been caught like that in a while. Vix, where can we find you to wrap it up?
You can find me on Sportsnet 960 Flames Talk all week long. It's an Aaron Vickers week, so set your dials accordingly.
Also on Twitter at AAVickers and at NHL.com. Thank you, boys. That was fun. For Wes, for Danny, for Aaron, my name is Pat. Little Monday Roundtable in the books. And this hour on Flames Talk has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.